Hi, Chris Bentley here. Thanks for downloading this episode of Here and Now Anytime. We have some great stories in the works, deep dives on the arts, the environment, childcare, and much more. To get those, plus the top news of the day, make sure you subscribe or follow us in the app of your choice. Just search for Here and Now Anytime. And if you're already subscribed, I'd love it if you told a friend about us. And thanks. Now here's the show.
As an artist, what I want to do is connect people to a feeling, make them feel something, you know, because these songs have so much wisdom.
Reinterpreting classic Mexican-American songs with La Marisol and Los Tex-Maniacs. It's Friday, May 26th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. We're stepping back from the news today and listening to some music instead. We do a lot of interviews on Here and Now with musicians. Today, we've got three conversations on three different genres. In a minute, Robin Young speaks with two members of a collective that's breaking barriers in Christian music.
Christian music generally denotes white music. Then gospel, it simply means black. That segregation has consisted into modern times until you had the founding of Maverick City Music.
And after that, the NPR podcast Louder Than a Riot wraps up its final season next week, and its hosts stopped in recently to talk about their deep dive into misogyny in hip-hop. But first, Deepa Fernandez spoke last month with a group whose new album is an exploration of one genre that deserves some more attention from a wider audience. I'll let Deepa take it from here.
When you think of American roots music, what do you think of? Maybe gospel, blues, fiddle music. But Corazones and Canciones, a new joint album from the Grammy winners La Marisol and Los Tex-Maniacs, reminds us that Mexican-American classics like Hermoso Cariño, which we're hearing right now, and Mucho Corazón belong in the American musical canon. Hermoso Cariño, Hermoso Cariño. 15 songs on the album are reinterpretations of classics that are meant to bring people together wherever they are. Eva Marisol Hernandez performs as La Marisol, and she joins us now. We've also got Max Barker, the leader of Los Tex-Maniacs, with us. Max, Marisol, hello.
Hi, thank hello. You. Thanks for having us.
Marisol, for those of us who might consider ourselves on some level Angelinos, we know you from La Santa Cecilia, and one of the things I love so much about your music is your deeply soulful voice. And I feel like you're a really old soul. Of course you're not, you're young. And you bring that on this album. And I'd love to know how you approach singing songs with so many different emotions and even different musical influences.
I feel like these songs are songs that I feel like formed me as a singer, and I feel very, very blessed to have been, you know, to have been born in Los Angeles, born and raised in LA, and that I learned this beautiful music from musicians singing in the heart of LA, you know, on Olvera Street. I didn't really hear these songs from recordings. I heard them from the musicians that were playing these songs on the street at the restaurants, and these señores were my maestros, and they were the ones that taught me how to sing and how to sing loud and how to connect with the audience, you know, and I feel that for me as a singer, what I want to do is connect people to a feeling, make them feel something, you know, because these songs have so much wisdom, have so much beautiful poetry, you know, that I feel as a singer, my job is to connect the art, the song, the lyrics, the melody with who's listening to them in hopes that they feel that love, that they feel that sadness, that nostalgia, no? And I feel like that's something that I really love to do as a performer, no?
There's so much in these songs. And let's play a little of Las Nubes, or The Clouds. A drift in an endless sky, so lost to the world is he, a man that has been forgotten.
Different in many ways.
Las Nubes, this song, it's been such an anthem of the Chicano civil rights movement. And Little Joe, the performer who made this song popular, joins you on this recording. I wonder if you can tell us, Max, a little more about the song's legacy and what it meant performing it all together.
So when we had the song, we said we'd love to have Little Joe, Ian, being that he made the song so popular, it would be nice to have him maybe sing a verse or so. But it turned out when I talked to him and asked him, he was like, sure, of course. He came to the studio and recorded the song through with Marisol. And he brought his magic to her magic and our magic. And it's a beautiful song, man. It has a lot of meaning for us Chicanos, growing up, in those hardships of the farm workers and so forth. And so, like Marisol said, every song on here has a special meaning in its own right,
It is, absolutely.
I think it's important for us to continue to interpret songs like this that represent such an important part of this country, which is our migrant farm workers, and to continue to shed light through our music about the history of and the importance of migrant workers, and especially now, when we see so much hate towards immigrants, so much ignorance, and where we see that, through this pandemic, we see that our farm workers, our immigrant farm workers, are the actual backbone of this country and are the ones that hold us up and that feed us, And so I feel like through our art, it's important, with music to continue to celebrate that history and to shed light, because I feel like it's something very necessary, They're farm workers deserve to live with dignity in this country.
In the middle of that, Marisol, do you see your music as speaking to those very people who are the targets, who are being targeted, who maybe are still toiling in the fields or their families have been separated? Is this album for them?
I feel that this album is for everybody. It's called Corazones y Canciones, and I feel like it's an album for anybody who has a heart. And we use our music to shed light on things that we are concerned about, but we also use our music to bring joy, to bring awareness, to connect people beyond their differences, to connect people through music, through love, through good rhythms. And I feel like this is something that we can continue to do.
I want to play Mucho Corazón, or A Lot of Heart. Let's listen.
Siempre mi amor debe tener sed fe. Pues cariño, no lo que hay en ti.
You can just feel the passion there. Can you reflect on this moment on the record for us?
I love this. I love this song, Mucho Corazón, and I love this moment con el gran Lorenzo Martinez, who is... who is he's a member of the Tex-Maniacs, but he's also from LA, and he's been a teacher to many, many musicians here. And it was an honor for me to be able to share those beautiful days with Lorenzo and to sing this song together. I felt like it was magical, and it was a moment where we could just pour our hearts and our love and what we truly do, because Lorenzo is an amazing musician and singer, but I think that the treasure in him is the way that he lets you in and makes you feel about love and about music. And for me, this was one of my favorite moments, where we got to duet together in the studio and I got to look at him play with his guitar and sing together. It's just one of those gifts, los regalos de la vida, a gift of life, and music.
Mm-hmm. Max, what was your favorite moment on this album?
I would have to agree with Marisol. It's Mucho Corazón. I was... in the control room at the time, and I was just sitting listening, and when a song gives you goosebumps and just touches you, I remember distinctly, just like, wow, just amazing. It was so beautiful, and you know, Marisol, she's the type of singer that can, she can go from one end to the next. You know, she starts off, you know, really soft, and then she can, the next minute she could belt it out there, you know. So that's what a beautiful thing, you know, with Marisol. And of course, Lorenzo's passion for music, it's he's a puro, that's, he's a heartfelt guy all the way around, man. And so that's the reason why we titled the album Corazones y Canciones.
Let's go out on a song that you suggest to us from the album.
Que te vaya bonito is another one of my favorites.
Perfecto.
Que te vaya bonito is a song written by El Gran José Alfredo Jiménez, and it's a way to say goodbye to that loved one, no, and wish them well. Yeah, wish them well on their way.
And Corazones y Canciones is out now. We've been speaking with Max Barker, the leader of Los Tex-Maniacs, and Eva Marisol Hernandez, known as La Marisol. Thank you so much to both of you. Well,
thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks. Gracias. Ojalá, ojalá que te vaya bonito.
Coming up next, Maverick City Music is a diverse collective that's changing the landscape of Christian music. And as they'll explain, that's not always the same as saying gospel music. The group won 4 Grammys this year, tying with Beyoncé for most wins of the night. And after the break, we'll hear Robin Young's conversation with 2 of the members.
You are a child.
That's Jireh, which in Hebrew means the Lord will provide, from Maverick City Music, a Christian music collective started by some songwriters in a room in Atlanta, now 30 members across the country working with superstars like Kirk Franklin, Chandler Moore, Naomi Raine. They're one of the most popular groups in Christian music, one of the most racially diverse. They've got 5 Grammy Awards, winning in both Christian and gospel categories. Pretty incredible, considering Maverick City Music was founded by Jonathan Jay and Tony Brown in Atlanta in 2018. We're joined now by Jonathan Jay. JJ, are you there?
I'm here.
And also Norman Jumphy, who's behind the collective now. Norman, welcome to you as well.
How you doing?
Well, better now. You know, this music is so uplifting. And Jonathan, take us back. You and Tony Brown were already songwriters for House Fires, another worship music group. Why Maverick City?
We saw a unique responsibility that we had to be as inclusive and as open as possible. We really kind of had an idea of bringing people to us. So we live in Atlanta. We thought it'd be great to just invite people that had been inspired by some of the music we had written, people that we were inspired by, to kind of get together. Many camps, many nights, getting to meet people that have kind of become fast friends. And then that turning into, what if we put this music out? What if we let people hear what we've been working on?
God's history. We go way, way back. We go way back.
That's History, featuring songwriter Alton Eugene, recording live at a Maverick City Music Song Share night at 1971 Sounds in Atlanta in 2019. Jonathan Jay, do I understand that you and Tony Brown sometimes would be in a room filled with Christian songwriters, the only people of color?
Yeah, absolutely. It was the elephant in the room. It's something that the heart of the mission behind a lot of what those early days were about, was making space for people who looked like us, who had something to contribute that needed to be highlighted.
Well, Norman, pick up there. We're talking about Christian music, not gospel.
So in the Christian music space, which I like to call inspirational music, Christian music generally denotes white music. And gospel, I mean, it simply means black. That segregation has consisted into modern times until you had the founding of Maverick City Music, and you begin to see these relationships form that broke barriers that had existed forever.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in an all-black church. And when I was 11, my parents switched churches and we went to an all-white church. And so I started off growing up listening to, you know, Fred Hammond and Kirk Franklin and the Winans and very deep, rich musical gospel history. And then had to learn about all these new forms of music that I'd never heard of, the Mercy Me's and the Chris Tomlins. And what I could see was that there were a lot of similarities. And I think a lot of that's represented in the way that we even present the music. There's a beautiful blending that I think is an opportunity that the industry has missed for such a long time.
Let's listen to a little more, because when you talk about reaching out, Jonathan, we know that your co-founder, Tony Brown's mom, was incarcerated.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about the role of the imprisoned. This is from your most recent project, Kingdom Book One. And the voices behind Maverick City Music members are inmates at the Everglades Correctional Institution in Miami.
Bless me, bless me, bless me, God in me. Let this be defeated, he is a victory. Bless me, God, not just for me, but so everyone around me can have everything they need.
Bless Me, written and performed by Kirk Franklin and Maverick City Music, and 1,300 inmates. Jonathan, tell us more.
Yeah, you know, as ministers of the gospel, we have, I think, a really serious responsibility to really believe the words of Jesus and to believe the heart of God, which is that he has no throwaway people. None of us are defined by our mistakes. The prisoners weren't just bystanders. They were our choir that we used. And so to think that the voices that you hear are voices of people that have been condemned and are trying to rewrite their own story, to think that they could be a part of a spiritual experience that would touch so many people around the world, for me, is it's probably one of my biggest takeaways, and something that's really moving.
Norman, Jonathan mentioned that it started with these workshops. It continues with workshops, right? You have to bring members from across the country to work together and then record?
Yeah, we do these writing camps where we bring together different worship leaders, writers, songwriters from all genres, you know, to come together and write music that uplifts Jesus. And it's been really important for us just to see the diversity in walks, the diversity in life. We did a Juneteenth album. We can speak to things that are impacting people today, like mass incarceration, like Juneteenth, which many of us grew up not knowing about, including myself.
Juneteenth, the celebration of the day the last enslaved people in America, in Texas, learned that slavery had ended at the end of the Civil War, but they learned it 2 years later. Let's listen to the song Sunday Morning.
All I can be is grateful.
Treat every day like Sunday
morning.
Jonathan, this was written during Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. Tell us more about what you wanted to do with this.
Yeah, you know, this project, again, for us is probably another first in the Christian music industry. I think as Christians, no matter what color you are, we all have a universal sense of the freedom that God has provided us. And so we just thought, man, if we can celebrate 4th of July, which is the independence, the freedom of America, why can't we celebrate and why shouldn't we be celebrating a freedom for people who were enslaved in this country? But it was a coming together of many different races. We have white artists on this project, and just a celebration of freedom from people who have a deep and profound sense and understanding of their true eternal freedom.
Jonathan Jay of Maverick City Music, but we also have Norman Jumphy. And Norman, I'm also wondering about, you know, 2018. You just started in 2018. I've read that the thinking is that maybe COVID had something to do with your huge success. People were just looking.
Yeah, absolutely. So in a time of crisis, generally people come back to what I consider faith. You look at 9/11, you look at 2008 stock market crash or the housing crisis, and most recently, the global pandemic. People come back to the faith. And the thing about Maverick that was already unique is that they were doing house church. This Maverick look and feel and sense is what church was going to become during the pandemic. Unbeknownst to us, Maverick was already doing it. Raw, live, in the living room, in your house, not knowing where that next paycheck is coming from, not knowing if we're ever going back to work. So the soundtrack of that time, all of these people were singing from these different places and these different sounds and these different tones. And I think it really captured America's heart.
If there's a songwriter out there saying, oh, this is, I've been looking for this, what should they do?
Hey, DM us on Instagram. We're always down to collaborate. Yeah.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. No problem.
One more story for you today. Next week is the last episode of the NPR podcast, Louder Than a Riot. But before they go, they stopped in for a conversation with Deepa about this season, which is all about women in hip-hop. That's coming up after the break.
Hip-hop is supposedly experiencing a new golden age. From Lil Nas X to Cardi B, Black women and queer people are reaching new heights within the culture. But those same groups are still dealing with the oppression that hip-hop was built to escape. Season 2 of the NPR podcast, Louder Than a Riot, is diving into the deep-seated discrimination inside hip-hop culture. And co-hosts Sydney Madden and Rodney Carmichael are here. Welcome to you both.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Deepa.
So let's go to the first episode of the season, which delves into the trial of Tory Lanez, who was found guilty of shooting rapper Megan Thee Stallion in the feet in the summer of 2020. Now, there's a lot of misinformation surrounding the case. You went to the courthouse to cover the trial, and people there were very divided over it. Sydney, why did you want to start season two with this case?
We thought it was essential to start season two with the case of Tory Lanez assaulting Megan Thee Stallion, because really that's where the first epiphany of this connection really dawned on us back in the summer of 2020. Actually, ironically, as we were making season one of the show. And it was really a wake-up call for the type of misogynoir that's been condoned, contained, and pretty much rewarded within the confines of hip-hop culture for decades. And that's exactly what we wanted to confront.
Yeah. And just quickly, tell us what you mean by, and this is explained really well in the podcast, misogynoir.
Absolutely. Yeah. Misogynoir is a sociological term in theory that depicts the compounding factors of racism and sexism that fall on the shoulders of Black women in society, as well as those read as Black women.
And in the Megan Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez case, it was Megan Thee Stallion who was the victim, but she was suddenly being put on trial. And you all spoke with scholar Moya Bailey, who coined the term, explaining how this fits into the context of Megan's case. Let's listen.
People are thinking that this is about whether Megan is telling the truth and the fact that she had to prove that she was in fact being honest about what happened to her, that is a manifestation of misogynoir.
Rodney, how did you see the misogynoir playing out over the course of your reporting on this case? And did the verdict do anything to calm the prejudices against Megan?
Well, the misogynoir played out in all kinds of ways. The build-up to this case was 2 years in the making. I think during that time, you saw a lot of memes making fun of Megan's trauma and tragedy around being shot. You saw a lot of talk about disbelieving her, you know, believing that she was lying and hadn't been shot. It was in other artists' music, you know, artists as huge as Drake. One of the most prominent lines in there is a line in which he basically, you know, casts aspersions and doubt on Megan's truth and Megan's story and being shot. You know, it was everywhere. It was pervasive, you know.
So the Megan Thee Stallion situation also highlighted how two things can be true at once, that the criminal justice system is set up to hurt black men, and Tory Lanez shot Megan. Sydney, why do you think it's difficult for so many people to reconcile that?
It can be very difficult for people to reconcile those two truths and hold that dichotomy within them because, in a certain sense, it also requires people to wrestle with their own morality and even sometimes their own allegiances. We know that the criminal justice system is discriminatory and disproportionately impacts people of color, black and brown men specifically, historically. And to that effect, a lot of hetero black women have taken up to guarding and shielding black men from these systems, from these powers that attempt to all but enslave and detain them. And it's almost as if you have to put pretty much your own mortality behind someone else's in order to protect them. And I think that was really what a lot of people felt like they were choosing to do in this situation.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that really struck me, even though Tory Lanez was convicted, Megan Thee Stallion's reputation is just, I feel like it'll never be the same, no matter how talented a rapper she is. Which brings us to your second episode of the season that tells the story of MC Sha-Rock. Rodney, she was one of the pioneers of hip-hop, yet many people don't know about her. Why?
Yeah, well, you know, in a lot of ways, while a lot of those men, those male pioneers, are remembered and heralded now, her name has kind of become a footnote, really. And I think a lot of that has to do with her experience as a woman in hip-hop and things she dealt with that the male members of her group didn't, like, you know, a pregnancy at a very pivotal time in the group's career, not being received well even by her own members.
You know, I think that's a very strong example of what you're talking about, that, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff that we learn in this episode is so compelling because Sha-Rock reveals that the group acted as if it were a betrayal. You know, we have a clip from your podcast. Let's just listen.
But do you ever think about the double standard of that? Like how you're choosing to do something with your own body could be a betrayal to them? Like how could that be?
I didn't look at it at that time. At the time, you know, far as like the betrayal, I kind of got it. You know, because not the fact that I betrayed them, but the fact that I love hip hop so much that I could have, you know, thought about, you know, there could have been other ways to, you know, to do it or other ways that I could have made sure that that wasn't the right timing. That was a decision that I made.
And Sydney, you continued to press Sha-Rock on this point. Why do you think she's still giving her crew members credit for this decades later?
I think Sha-Rock, as a lot of our protagonists in this season did, defended a lot of the actions and implications of group members for the longevity and future of hip-hop overall. There's this, you know, the saying that we come to interrogate a lot, and it's doing it for, quote-unquote, the sake of the culture. Because at the time that Sha-Rock was coming up, and even now, 50 years in, with hip-hop being the most commercially successful genre coming out of the U.S., it's still a precarious and fragile art form, very much so. So a lot of the things that black women and femmes in hip-hop are being tasked with to put up with or to condone or overlook, it's always done, quote-unquote, for the sake of the culture, for the longevity of all of us. But really, like, that's what we need to confront the most.
And Louder Than a Riot has been so important in beautifully telling these untold stories and exposing truths within hip hop culture and beyond. And sadly, this second season will be the last due to the NPR layoffs that we have reported on. I'd just love to hear very quickly what you would like your podcast's legacy to be.
Well, I think in particular, when we look at this season, we want our legacy to be that we had the baddest, best, most brilliant team in narrative podcasting. You know, this was a very collaborative season. Our producers and editor, Saraya Shockley, Gabby Bulgarelli, Sam J. Leeds, and Mano Sundaresan, we have all been very collaborative in terms of reporting and writing these stories that in a lot of ways, yeah, whatever the future for Louder is, it definitely won't be the same without them.
Somebody snap them up quick. Sydney Madden and Rodney Carmichael, co-hosts of the NPR podcast Louder Than a Riot. Season 2 just dropped. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Deepa.
Thanks for having us.
Head to hereandnow.org for more about everything you heard today. If you want to hear that last season of Louder Than a Riot, it's in your podcast feed, anywhere you can get podcasts, from NPR. This show comes from the team behind Here and Now, from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Gabrielle Healy, Catherine Swartz, Karen Miller-Medson, James Mastromarino, and Sam Rafelson. Our editors are Gabe Bullard, Julia Corcoran, Todd Munt, Peter O'Dowd, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto and Max Liebman, with help from Caleb Green. Theme music by Mike, Max, and me. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks also to Ashley Locke, who's been filling in as host while I've been away. And thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time.